commentary track presents Radio Movies, classic radio shows based on classic films, with your host, Frank Thompson.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 9 of Radio Movies. Tonight's episode is the Screen Guild Theater production of The Maltese Falcon, first broadcast on September 20th, 1943. And it stars just about everybody from the movie that you need. Humphrey Bogart, Mary Astor, Sidney Greenstreet, and Peter Lorre. Sadly, Elisha Cook Jr. is not in the radio show, but you can't have everything. Now, The Maltese Falcon, as you probably know, was filmed 3 times. It was Dashiell Hammett's 3rd novel. For such a legendary mystery writer, he only published 5 novels and a handful of short stories, but he's about as highly regarded as anybody there is. And in movie terms, you can't get much better because he wrote the book that resulted in The Maltese Falcon, and he also wrote the book The Thin Man, which turned into quite a juggernaut for MGM in 1934 and onward. He published The Maltese Falcon in 1930, and it was immediately snapped up by Warner Brothers. They released their first film version in 1931. It starred Ricardo Cortez and a dazzling lineup of pre-code ladies. You got Bebe Daniels, who bleached her hair blonde for the role, the great Una Merkel, and the even greater Thelma Todd. Any movie with Thelma Todd in it is worth watching, in my house anyway. A decade later, after another weird kind of remake, which we'll talk about later, John Huston decided to write the screenplay, and he maneuvered to direct the film as well. He had already written the screenplay for a pretty impressive lineup of Warner Brothers hits. Jezebel, The Amazing Dr. Clitterhouse, Juarez, Dr. Ehrlich's Magic Bullet, High Sierra, and Sergeant York. Not a bad lineup. And I think that's why Jack Warner was willing to give Huston what he wanted, the chance to direct his first feature film. Before the film was completed, it was announced that the title would be The Knight of Malta, the K-N-I-G-H-T of Malta, which sounds kind of like a castle movie, doesn't it? That didn't last long, and it was The Maltese Falcon again for a while. And then on the day of the first preview, which was September 5th, 1941, the studio announced to the trades that the new title would be The Gent from Frisco. Luckily, that didn't seem to stick either. Now, Warner Brothers, for some reason, they seem to have had trouble with the title The Maltese Falcon. They never liked it. I don't know why. They just never did. The 1931 film, although it was eventually released as The Maltese Falcon, was known for a while as Woman of the World, and then for a while as Dangerous Female. And I think you can probably still find prints called Dangerous Female around if you look hard enough. And I have a set of stills from the film that are labeled Woman of the World. I don't know why. They must have thought The Maltese Falcon was confusing to people, even though it was an incredibly popular book. In 1936 is when Warners remade it with Bette Davis and Warren William. I've often said that Warren William, while he might not have been the greatest actor in the history of the world, he is still terrific, and he is almost always a sign that the movie that you're watching is going to be good. For whatever reason, he is just almost always in great pictures. Satan Met a Lady is not a great picture. This is the exception that proves the rule, I guess. It plays around with the plot of The Maltese Falcon. They just made weird little changes, like, for instance, Warren William plays a detective named Ted Shane instead of Sam Spade, and he's seeking the legendary Horn of Roland instead of the Blackbird. And it just doesn't work out particularly well. So 1941, it was time for somebody to do it right again. And even though John Huston's version, because of the stricter production code guidelines, was not quite as racy as the 1931 version, it has become the classic. And it's always the example I give, or one of the examples, because there's lots, but whenever it's announced that somebody's going to remake a film, and especially a film from, you know, the golden age, film buffs start whining and complaining, and, oh, they can't remake a classic. But in fact, I mean, Maltese Falcon is considered one of the greatest films ever made, and it was the 3rd version of this story. So remakes can work out. remakes can work out. Now, this is another case, one of many cases, apparently, where George Raft missed the boat. He was offered the role of Sam Spade first, but he didn't think that it was going to be an important film. George Raft had made Warner promise him that he would not have to perform in anything but important pictures. And The Maltese Falcon was clearly not going to be an important picture. Let's also remember that he turned down Casablanca. He turned down a lot of things that he should not have turned down. The AFI catalog has in its entry on this film the fact that Raft had in his contract that he was never to do any kind of remake. In his autobiography, John Huston said that Raft was just nervous about working with a first-time director. So, for whatever reason, he missed the boat. But here's a weird thing. You know, when you're researching, when you're going through periodicals of the time, which is always the best way to go to get what was happening on the ground at the time the film was being made, there was a 1941 trade magazine article that states that Barton MacLean played the same role in both the 1931 and 1941 pictures. When I first read that article, when I was researching this, I thought, well, that's interesting. I never noticed that, Barton MacLean playing the same role in both pictures. And the reason I never noticed it, because he didn't. MacLean played Lieutenant Dundee in the 1941 film, but in 1931 film, Lieutenant Dundee was played by Robert Elliott. So I guess that's just a lesson that film historians need to double check their facts, because the original writer sometimes didn't double check theirs. A lot of people went through the casting possibilities on this film. Geraldine Fitzgerald was offered the part of Bridget O'Shaughnessy, which eventually went to Mary Astor. And again, from the AFI catalog, and I don't know what the source is, there's the AFI catalog, which I think is terrific, but they sometimes have this weird thing of saying modern sources add the following information. And they say that among the women considered for the role of Bridget were Olivia de Havilland, Loretta Young, Rita Hayworth, Paulette Goddard, Brenda Marshall, Janet Gaynor, Joan Bennett, Betty Field, and Ingrid Bergman. Now, any of those would have made an interesting choice, I guess. If it turns out not to be true, petition AFI about this. I'm just reporting what I read. That's all. The one that I kind of regret, even though I think Elisha Cook Jr. makes a terrific Weasley villain in this film, is that Frankie Darrow was considered for the role of Wilmer. And I'm kind of sad because Frankie Darrow had a career that just didn't go much anywhere after, you know, The Public Enemy and then, of course, The Great Wild Boys of the Road. And little by little, he just gets into supporting roles and then just bit parts after that and just goes away. So it's always sad when you see him that he could have been in one of these great films and didn't make the cut. Even though it was John Huston's first film, turned out pretty well. It got Sidney Greenstreet an Oscar nomination for supporting actor. John Huston got an Oscar nomination for best screenplay. And it was nominated as best picture. As a matter of fact, it did so well at the box office that the studio decided to make a sequel. And they really didn't burn a lot of calories coming up with the title to this sequel, which they were going to call The Further Adventures of the Maltese Falcon. You boy. That would have them lining up at the box office. Dashiell Hammett was approached to write the story for that sequel, but he had a pretty high price tag to do that. And Jack Warner decided that he was not worth the $5,000 that he had asked for. And so they dropped the plan. Probably just as well. I can't really see a sequel to this film. But nevertheless, I mean, most of the main characters are alive at the end of the first film. So why not bring them back? You'd have to get Mary Astor out of jail somehow. But, you know, movies can do that kind of thing. There have been a couple of parodies of this film. George Segal is in a film called The Blackbird that came out in 1975. And both Lee Patrick and Elisha Cook Jr. came back for that film. Could have been Frankie Darrow coming back for that film, if only things had been different. And of course, there was also a radio series called The Adventures of Sam Spade that starred Howard Duff and Lorene Tuttle as Effie. And there were at least three radio versions. As a matter of fact, Edward G. Robinson and Gail Patrick starred in a 1943 production of Lux Radio Theater, which we'll probably play at some later date after you've forgotten about this one. But I chose this one because it has four major cast members in the radio adaptation. It was done again a couple of years later with Bogart, Mary Astor, and Sidney Greenstreet, but not Peter Lorre. So if we ever come back to that one, we'll do that one next, and then the Edward G. Robinson. But that, Maybe we'll make this an annual affair of Maltese Falcon radio remakes. And of course, we're talking about parodies. Let's not forget Rowan and Martin's The Maltese Bippy, which you'll be surprised to learn was not all that faithful to the original story. But this radio version is pretty faithful to the original movie. It's always delightful to hear these four performers at it, no matter what they're doing. This is a half-hour version, so it's very much cut down. But it works, and it's great fun to listen to. So I hope that you will enjoy it, and I'll talk to you later.
Esther presents the Screen Guild Players. The Screen Guild play tonight, The Maltese Falcon. The starring players.
This is Humphrey Bogart.
This is Mary Astor.
This is Sidney Greenstreet.
And this is Peter Lorre.
Tonight, Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild Players in Warner Brothers' sensational mystery story, The Maltese Falcon. It stars Humphrey Bogart as Private Detective Sam Spade, Mary Astor as Miss Wonderly, Sidney Greenstreet as Casper Gutman, and Peter Lorre as Joel Cairo. This is the story of the Maltese Falcon and of the people whose lives it touched and seared. It began in San Francisco when a beautiful young woman, who identified herself as Miss Wonderly, walked into the offices of Spade and Archer, private detectives. Miss Wonderly had just told Sam Spade why she wished to engage detectives when Spade's partner, Miles Archer, entered the office.
Oh, excuse me, Sam.
No, it's all right, Miles. Come in. Miss Wonderly, this is Miles Archer, my partner.
How do you do?
Well, I'm pleased to meet you.
Miss Wonderly's sister ran away from New York with a fellow named Floyd Thursby. They're here in San Francisco. Miss Wonderly has seen Thursby and has a date with him tonight. Maybe he'll bring the sister with him. The chances are he won't. Miss Wonderly wants us to find the sister, get her away from Thursby and back home.
But I want you to know that he's a dangerous man. I don't think he'd stop at anything. I don't believe he'd hesitate to kill Corinne, my sister, if he thought it would save him.
Uh-huh. What time is he coming to see you, Miss Wonderly?
After 8 o'clock.
All right, Miss Wonderly, we'll have a man there.
Oh, I'll look after it myself.
Thank you, Mr. Archer. Will $200 be enough for a retainer?
Well, plenty. Oh, it'll help if you meet Thursby in your hotel lobby, Miss Wonderly.
I will. Thank you again.
Goodbye. Well, Archer, what do you think of her?
Sweet. I'm going to enjoy shadowing her.
Okay, sucker. You call me if you run into any trouble. Hello? Yes, it's Spade.
It's Lieutenant Dundee, Spade.
What's on your mind, copper?
I thought you might be interested in knowing that your partner, Archer, was found in an alley near the St. Mark, shot through the heart from close range. Blast burnt his coat. Coming down for a look at him before he's moved?
No. You've seen everything I could.
His gun was tucked away on his hip. It hadn't been fired. His overcoat was buttoned. Was he working, Sam? Well?
He was supposed to be tailing a fellow named Floyd Thursby.
What for?
Now, don't crowd me. I'll see you after I break the news to Archer's wife.
I'll be there in a couple of hours.
Oh, hello, copper. Come on in.
Break the news to Archer's wife, Sam?
Uh-huh.
What kind of a gun do you carry?
None. I don't like them much.
You don't just happen to have one on you?
Search me. Turn the dump upside down if you want to. I won't squawk if you got a search warrant.
Why were you tailing Floyd Thursby, Sam?
I wasn't. Archer was, for the swell reason that we had a client who was paying good money to have him tailed.
Who's the client?
Sorry, I can't tell you that.
You didn't go to Archer's house to tell his wife. I called up, and the girl from your office was there, and she said you told her to go.
What are you leading up to?
Just this, Spade. Floyd Thursby was shot down in front of his hotel about a half an hour after I talked to you.
Oh. I came into my apartment just a few minutes ahead of you. I was walking around thinking things over.
I knew you weren't here. I tried to get you on the phone. Where'd you walk to?
Just around. Thursby die?
Yeah.
How'd I kill him? I forget.
He was shot four times in the back.
Hotel people know anything about him?
Nothing. Except he'd been there a week.
Alone?
Alone.
You find out who he was, what his game was?
No, I thought you could tell me that.
I've never seen Thursby dead or alive.
Now, look, Spade. You know me. If you did get Thursby, you'll get a square deal from me. And most of the breaks. I don't know that I'd blame you a lot, man that killed your partner. But that wouldn't keep me from nailing you.
That's fair enough. Now, would you mind scramming? I got some thinking to do, and I'd like to get a little sleep before daylight. Hello? Yeah, this is Sam Spade. Oh, I was just going to call you. Where are you? Well, the Coronet on California Street, apartment 101. What's that? The name's Miss LeBlanc. Okay, I'll be right out. Oh, good morning.
Come in, Mr. Spade. Mr. Spade, I have a terrible, terrible confession to make. That story I told you yesterday was all just a story.
Huh. Oh, that. Well, we didn't exactly believe your story, Miss... Is your name Wonderly or LeBlanc?
It's really O'Shaughnessy. Bridget O'Shaughnessy.
Oh. Well, Miss O'Shaughnessy, as I said, we didn't exactly believe your story. We believed your $200.
Oh?
Yes, you see, you paid us too much to be telling the truth.
You knew that when you accepted the money?
Oh, I suspected it. I was positive when Joel Cairo called on me.
Joel Cairo?
Yeah. Yeah, he seems interested in Floyd Thursby, too.
What did he say?
About what?
About me.
Nothing.
Well, what did he talk about?
Well, he offered me $5,000 for a black statuette of a bird. He was pretty sure I had it or knew where it was.
Do you?
Oh, I think I know someone who does, and $5,000 is a lot of money. But right now, the police are trying to find out who hired us to tail Floyd Thursby.
Mr. Spade, do they know about me?
No, I don't think they do. I've been able to stall them so far.
Must they know about me at all, Mr. Spade? Couldn't you manage somehow to shield me from them?
Maybe. But I'll have to know what it's all about.
I can't tell you now. Later I will, when I can. You must trust me, Mr. Spade. Oh, I'm so alone and afraid. I've got nobody to help me if you won't help me. Be generous, Mr. Spade. You're strong. You're brave. You can spare me some of that strength and courage, surely.
Sister, you don't need much of anybody's help. You're good. Chiefly your eyes, I think, and that throb you get in your voice when you say things like, be generous, Mr. Spade.
All right. I deserve that. But the lie was in the way I said it, and not at all in what I said.
Ah, now you are dangerous. Still, Cairo offered me $5,000.
It's far more than I could ever offer you if I must bid for your life.
Yeah, that's good coming from you. Have you given me any of your confidence, any of the truth? I can't go ahead without more confidence in you than I have now.
Can't you trust me just a little while?
Well, how much is a little? And what are you waiting for?
I must talk to Joe Cairo.
Oh. Well, you can see him tonight. I know where to reach him.
Oh, he can't come here. I can't let him know where I am. I'm afraid.
Well, we'll all meet at my place, then.
All right.
I'm delighted to see you again, Mr. O'Shaughnessy.
I was sure you would be, Joe. Mr. Spade told me about your offer for the Maltese Falcon. How soon can you have the money ready?
Oh, it is ready.
You are ready to give us $5,000 if we turn the Falcon over to you?
I shall be able to give you the money as soon as the bank opens in the morning.
But I haven't got the Falcon.
Then why did you send for me?
Because I'll have it in another week.
Yes? Where is it?
Where Floyd hid it.
If you know where he hid it, why must we wait a week? And why are you willing to sell it to me?
I'm afraid, after what happened to Floyd, I'm afraid to touch it except to turn it over to somebody else right away.
Exactly what did happen to Floyd?
The fat man.
Gutman? Is he here?
I don't know. I suppose so.
If you two let me interrupt for a second, I can answer that. Gutman is here.
How do you know?
Because he called me and asked me to see him.
Have you?
Not yet. I thought that after our friend Cairo here left, I'd find out just how you and I stand before I took on any more clients.
Now, do you know how you and I stand, Sam?
Yeah. If I can believe anything about you. But you're such a liar.
I am a liar. I've always been a liar.
Well, I wouldn't brag about it. Was there any truth at all in that yarn you were telling me about Thursby and the Falcon?
Some. Not very much.
Well, we've got all night before us.
I'm so tired. So tired of lying and thinking up lies and not knowing what is a lie and what is the truth. I wish...
Hey, look, honey. I think I'd better have a talk with Gutman in the morning. Now, Mr. Gutman, shall we talk about the Falcon?
Oh, by all means, Mr. Spade. But first, sir, answer me a question. Are you here as Miss O'Shaughnessy's representative?
Well, there's nothing certain about it either way yet. It depends.
Maybe it depends on Joel Cairo?
Maybe.
The question then, Mr. Spade, is which you'll represent. It'll be Miss O'Shaughnessy or Mr. Cairo?
I didn't say so.
Who else is there?
There's me.
Oh, well, that's wonderful, sir, wonderful. I do like a man who tells you right out he's looking out for himself. Don't we all?
Uh-huh. Now let's talk about the Blackbird.
Let's, Mr. Spade. Have you any conception of how much money can be got out of that Blackbird?
No, but you just tell me what it is and I'll figure out the profits.
You mean you don't know what that bird is?
Well, I know it's black enamel and about a foot high, and I know the value in human life you people put on it.
Miss O'Shaughnessy didn't tell you what it is?
He offered
me... And Cairo didn't either?
He offered me $10,000 for it.
Do either of them know what that bird is, sir? What is your impression?
Well, there's not much to go by, but I don't think so.
If they don't know, I'm the only one in the whole wide, sweet world who does.
Good. And when you tell me, there'll be two of us.
Mathematically correct, sir. But I don't know for certain that I'm going to tell you.
If you think again and think fast, you'll do your talking today. You're through. What are you wasting my time for? I can get along without you.
That remains to be seen, Mr. Spade. There are ways...
And there's another thing. Keep that gunman of yours away from me while you're making up your mind, or I'll kill him.
Well, sir, I must say you have a very violent temper.
Think it over. You've got till 5:30. Then you're either in or out for keeps.
Wilma.
I'm going to kill that guy. I could have done it easy when he was standing there with his back to me.
Of course you could, my boy. But business before pleasure. And we'll be seeing Mr. Spade again before 5:30.
So ends Act One of The Maltese Falcon, starring Peter Lorre, Sidney Greenstreet, Mary Astor, and Humphrey Bogart. Act Two in just a moment. But first, here's a word from our hostess, Lady Astor.
Some weeks ago, I was being shown through a shipyard, one of the largest in the country, and stopped to chat with a young woman wearing a safety mask. It gave her a stern, rather severe look, but when she removed the mask to chat with me, she was young and blonde and very lovely. Her skin looked so dainty and fresh that I just couldn't resist saying, "My, you look as though you just stepped out of a bandbox." She laughed and said, "Oh, wife, I've been on the job since early this morning, and I haven't even had time to repowder my face. But after all, I do use your powder, you know." Of course, she's only one of millions of busy, important women who use Lady Astor face powder, partly because of its remarkable clinging quality. They explain that when they use Lady Astor face powder, they have the comfortable feeling that their skin always looks smooth and fresh, never streaked, caked, or shiny. But that's only one of the reasons why more lovely women now use Lady Esther face powder than any other kind. There are two other important reasons. First, the texture of my powder is so flattering that it hides little lines and blemishes, makes your skin look younger. And second, the shades of Lady Esther face powder are so rich, vivid, and alive, they give new interest, a look of new beauty to your skin. And both the unusual texture and the flattering shades are the result of my patented twin hurricane method of making face powder. So if you'd like to have your skin look softer, smoother, younger, and look that way for hours at a time, just try Lady Esther face powder.
Curtain rises on the second act of The Maltese Falcon, starring Humphrey Bogart as Sam Spade, Mary Astor as Bridget O'Shaughnessy, Sidney Greenstreet as Casper Gutman, the Fat Man, and Peter Lorre as Joel Cairo. In the afternoon following Sam Spade's visit to Gutman's apartment, a dying man staggered into Spade's office and collapsed on the floor. He died before he could speak to Spade, but his papers identified him as Captain Jacoby of the steamship La Paloma, and clutched to his bullet-torn chest was the Maltese Falcon. After depositing the Falcon in a railroad station checkroom and mailing the identification check to his private post office box, Sam met Bridget O'Shaughnessy and took her to his apartment.
No, Sam, I never would have placed myself in this position if I hadn't trusted you completely.
Oh, that again?
But you know that's so.
You don't have to trust me as long as you can persuade me to trust you.
But Sam, darling...
Well, I think we better let it go at that until we see what happens after Gutman gets here.
The fat man? Here?
Certainly, why not? Anyway, that should be him. So it's too late to change our plans. I'll be right back. Oh, hello, Gutman.
Good evening, sir.
I see you brought company. I can understand the gunman, but I didn't know Cairo was a friend of yours.
No, we're old acquaintances. Now that we're all here, let's go in and sit down and be comfortable and talk.
Oh, sure. Come on in. Now, look, Angel. Gutman brought a couple of friends along.
Good evening, Mr. O'Shaughnessy.
Hello, Joe.
You look unusually charming this evening, my dear.
Thanks.
The gunsel doesn't talk, Angel. Get away from me, punk.
Stand still and shut up.
Listen, you're not going to frisk me, touch me, and I'm going to make you use that gun. Ask your boss if he wants me shut up before we talk.
Never mind, Wilma. Oh, you're certainly a most headstrong and unpredictable individual, Mr. Spade. Now, why did you send for me?
You ready to make the first payment and take the Falcon off my hands?
The Falcon?
That's right, Angel. I've got it.
Well, sir, I have in this envelope $10,000.
$10,000? Oh, we were talking about more money than that.
Yes, sir, we were, but there are more of us to be taken care of now.
Well, that may be, but I've got the Falcon.
I shouldn't think it would be necessary to remind you, Mr. Spade, that though you may have the Falcon, yet we certainly have you.
Yes, I'm trying not to let that worry me, but let the money wait. There's another thing to be taken care of first. We've got to have a fall guy.
I beg your pardon?
Police have got to have a victim, somebody they can stick for those three murders.
Two. Only two murders, Mr. Spade. Thursby undoubtedly killed your partner.
All right, two then. Now, the point I've got to give the police, a victim when the time comes. If I don't, I'll be it. Let's give him Wilmer here.
Why, you dirty rat.
He actually did shoot Thursby and Jacoby, didn't he? Anyway, he's made to order for the part. Let's turn him over to them.
By God, so you are a character, that you are. There's never any telling what you'll say or do next, except that it's bound to be something astonishing.
Well, it's our best bet. With him in their hands, the police will forget the rest of us.
Your plan is not at all practical, sir. Let's not say anything more about it.
All right. I have another suggestion. Let's give him Cairo.
Well, by God, sir.
Suppose we give him you, Mr. Spade, or Mr. Shaughnessy. How about that, huh?
Sam, you wouldn't.
You people want the fork, and I've got it. A fall guy is part of the price I'm insisting on.
You seem to forget you're not in a position to insist on anything.
No? If you kill me, how are you going to get the Falcon?
By Gad, sir, you are a character.
Well?
Well, what else can I do? I'm sorry, Wilma. Terribly sorry. I want you to know that I couldn't be any fonder of you if you were my own son. But, well, if
You lose a son, it's possible to get another. And there's only one Maltese Falcon.
You rat, I'll kill you for this.
Thank you, Mr. Spade. When you're young as Wilmer, one simply doesn't understand these things.
And how about some coffee, Bridget? Put the pot on, will you? I don't like to leave my guests.
Surely. Anything to get out of you.
Now, sir, let's get down to business.
I ought to have more than 10,000.
Of course, sir, you understand this is the first payment. You still don't understand the Falcon's worth.
Well, a black enamel bird can't be worth millions.
But it is. Otherwise, I should not have spent 17 years of my life trying to acquire it. The black enamel you refer to, sir, is merely camouflage, covering a solid gold bird encrusted from head to foot with the finest jewel.
Okay. So I get millions later. How's about 15,000 now?
Frankly and candidly, and on my word of honor as a gentleman, 10,000 I gave you is all the money I can raise right now.
Yeah, but you didn't say positively.
Positively.
Well, if that's the best you can do, it's the best you can do. But it's understood the punk has to stand as the fall guy.
That is part of our agreement, sir.
Okay, I'll make a phone call. The Falcon will be here in an hour.
It's a fake. Huh? This is not the Maltese Falcon. This is a lead imitation covered with the same enamel. See where I've shaved it off with a knife? Lead. Pure lead.
You bungled it. You, Gutman. You and your stupid attempt to buy it from the Russian who owned it. He caught on to how valuable it was. No wonder we had so little trouble stealing it. You imbecile. You bloated idiot.
Well, sir, what do you suggest? Shall we stand here and shed tears and call each other names? Or shall we pay the Russian another call in Istanbul?
Are you going?
17 years I've wanted that item, and I intend to get it. Another year, well, sir, that will be an additional expenditure of time on only 5 15/17%.
I go with you.
Good. And Wilmer?
Wilmer,
Where is the boy?
He must have made his getaway while we were unwrapping the fog.
A swell lot of thieves.
Well, sir, I left to ask you to return my $10,000.
I held up my end. It's your hard luck, not mine, if you didn't get what you wanted.
I'm sorry, but I must insist.
Oh, a hideout gun, huh? Okay.
Thank you, sir. The shortest farewells are the best. Adieu. And to you, Miss O'Shaughnessy, I leave the fake Falcon as a little memento. Come, girl.
Hello, police department. Lieutenant Dundee there, put him on. Tell him Sam Spade's calling. Now, look, Angel. Gutman and Cairo will talk when the cops nail him about us. We've only got minutes to get set for the police. Now, give me your whole story, fast.
Well, where shall I begin?
The day you first came to my office. Why did you want Thursby shadowed?
I suspected him of betraying me to Gutman, and I wanted to find out.
That's a lie. Gutman tried to make a deal with him. You had Thursby hooked, and you knew it. You wanted to get him out of the way before Captain Jacoby arrived with the Falcon. Isn't that so? What was your scheme?
I thought if he saw someone following him, he might be frightened into going away.
Now look, Archer hadn't many brains, but he wasn't clumsy enough to be spotted the first night. You must have told Thursby he was being followed.
I told him. Yes. But please believe me, Sam, I wouldn't have told him if I'd thought Floyd would kill him.
If you thought he wouldn't kill Archie, you were right, Angel.
Didn't he?
Archie had been a detective too long to be caught shadowing a man up a blind alley with his gun tucked away in his hip and his overcoat button. But he'd have gone up there with you, Angel. He was just dumb enough for that.
Sam.
And then you could have stood as close to him as you liked, there in the dark. Put a hole through him with a gun you'd gotten from Thursby that evening.
Don't talk to me like that, Sam. You know I didn't.
Now, the police will be blowing in any minute now, Angel. Talk.
Oh, why do you accuse me of such a terrible...
Why did you shoot Archie? I thought Thursby would tackle him and one or the other would go down. If Thursby was killed, then you were rid of him. If it was Archer, then you could see that Thursby was caught. Was that it?
Something.
And when
something
you find
like
out
that.
That Thursby didn't mean to tackle Archer, you borrowed the gun and did it yourself, right?
I guess so.
I know so. You didn't know Gutman was here looking for you until you learned Thursby was shot. Then you needed another protector. So you came back to me.
Yes, but though, sweetheart, it wasn't only that. I would have come back to you sooner or later. From the very first instant I saw you, I knew that...
You angel. Well, if you get a good break, you'll be out of San Quentin in 20 years.
Sam, you're not...
Yes, Angel. I'm going to send you over. But if they hang you, I'll always remember you.
Don't, Sam. Don't say that. Even in fun.
It's not fun. I happen to be in the detective business, and you killed my partner. It's bad business to let the killer get away with it. Bad for every detective in this country. You're taking the fall.
You've been playing with me. Only pretending you cared to trap me like this. You didn't care at all. You don't love me.
I think I do. But what of it? I won't play the sap for you.
You know it's not like that. You can't say that.
I am saying it.
You know down deep in your heart, you know that in spite of everything I've done, I love you.
I don't care who loves who. You killed Archer. You're going over for it. Come in. Oh, hello, copper.
Hello, Sam.
You get Gutman and Cairo?
We got Cairo. Gutman's dead. Kid Wilmer had just finished shooting him when we got there.
So I ought to have expected that. You better put the cuffs on Angel, copper. We're taking her down to the station.
What charge?
Sam.
Murder. She shot Miles Archer. Oh, and you better bring that blackbird along, too, copper. It's part of the evidence against Cairo.
Hey, this is heavy. What's it made of?
The stuff that dreams are made of.
And so ends the story of the Maltese Falcon. Thank you, Mary Astor, Humphrey Bogart, Sidney Greenstreet, and Peter Lorre, for appearing with the Lady Astor Screen Guild players tonight, and also for telling us a most exciting story.
It was our pleasure, Mr. Bradley. We all had a wonderful time making the picture, and the radio version tonight brought back some wonderful memories. Then, too, knowing that the benefits from these programs support the Motion Picture Country House and Clinic give us an added incentive. And now, before we tell you about next week's program, here's a word from one of America's best-known beauty authorities, Lady Esther.
Thank you, Miss Astor. Ladies, you know it's surprising the number of letters new users of Lady Esther face powder have sent me in the last few months. So many of them say the same thing, that Lady Esther face powder is an entirely different kind of powder, but it does wonderful things for the appearance of the skin, makes it look softer, smoother, and often years younger. Well, Lady Esther face powder is more flattering, more becoming, because my powder isn't just mixed, just blended like ordinary face powder. It's made by a method new, unique, exclusively mine. You see, Lady Esther face powder is blown at whirling speed by my famous twin hurricanes. Yes, my patented twin hurricane process blows and whips color and powder particles together until they're evenly married, blended into a fine, smooth, sheer mist of beauty, finer in texture and truer in shade than powder ever made by ordinary methods. That's why Lady Esther face powder smooths on so much more evenly, and why the shades of my powder are so clear and alive. They make your skin younger looking, more vivid, far lovelier. Why don't you try Lady Esther face powder and see how much happier you'll be with the appearance of your skin?
Before we tell you about next week's program, Humphrey Bogart has a word to say from our government.
As you all know, the third war loan drive is on full steam, the drive to back the attack our fighting forces are making against our enemies. As our share toward victory, we at home must buy $15 billion worth of war bonds, which means each one of us must dig down deeper into our own pockets. Each of us must buy at least one extra bond this month. We have to win this war, and we will win, all right. But how soon we win is up to every one of us. So buy an extra war bond this week, sure, to help speed our day to victory.
Next week, the Lady Esther Screen Guild players will present highlights from Warner Brothers' great new musical picture, Thank Your Lucky Stars. It will star Joan Leslie, Dennis Morgan, Dinah Shore, and Eddie Cantor. be sure to listen. Humphrey Bogart can soon be seen in the Warner Brothers production, Thank Your Lucky Stars. Mary Astor is currently playing in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Technicolor production, Thousands Cheer. Sidney Greenstreet and Peter Lorre appeared through the courtesy of Warner Brothers. Music on tonight's program was arranged and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. To help your government save tin, buy the larger size of Lady Esther face cream, and at the same time, you will save yourself money to invest in war bonds and stamps. Truman Bradley speaking for Lady Esther. Thank you. Good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That was a fun production of the Maltese Falcon. As I said before the show, there are a couple more radio versions, and we'll get to those one of these days. You need to put a little space between things like this, because the next version is also a half an hour long. I was really tempted to just load them on both in the same show. And it would still make only an hour-long show. It wouldn't be that bad, but then I decided, why front load all this stuff? Let's dole it out so it'll be appreciated. Speaking of appreciation, I appreciate Claire McCullough, my wonderful announcer for both Radio Movies and the commentary track. I hope that you will listen to both of these podcasts. Commentary track features interviews with film historians and filmmakers and archivists and just people that I think are cool. And we've been going on for close to 2 years now, so there's lots and lots and lots of good interviews just sitting there waiting for you to discover. You can get it on iTunes, or you can go straight to the website, thecommentarytrack.com. Remember to put thecommentarytrack.com, or Lord knows where you'll end up. Some horrible place. Ooh. I also appreciate James Hutchins, who designed both my websites, thecommentarytrack.com and frankthompson.tv. Visit them both early and often. And I appreciate the great Michael Bolt, who wrote my theme music. Love that theme music. Getting a lot of good feedback about it. So thank you, Michael. I hope that you'll visit the website, thecommentarytrack.com, not only to download the podcast, if iTunes is too hoity-toity for your kind, but you can also order books and DVDs and so forth, books that I wrote, DVDs that I had something to do with, and also books and DVDs related to all of my guests on the commentary track. And you can click on the Amazon link and order stuff from the website, and then I'll get a little bit of a kickback. And I appreciate that very much. And in fact, there's just a general Amazon link on the front page of thecommentarytrack.com. You just hit that. Clear your cookies first, I've been told. Clear your cookies. And then hit that, and then go to Amazon and buy whatever you want. Because Amazon has everything, literally everything. So go through my site for whatever you want to buy. And then that means that I'll get a little bit of tiny little percentage of that, but it won't cost you an extra cent from what you would have spent otherwise. So this works out well for everybody concerned. When it's happy for you and happy for me and happy for Amazon and happy for the people who are selling the stuff on Amazon, that makes the world a better place. Don't you want to make the world a better place? If you want to make the world a worse place, just stay away from my website. But if you want to make it better, that's how you do it. See, really the only way you could do it as far as I know. So I hope that you will do that. And I also hope that you will return next week for another great radio program. And until then, if you haven't seen it, find the Maltese Falcon and watch it. You'll like it.